something. Now would be the time to ask. Otherwise, we'll go right into the decision document and work through the different segments of the amendment. Any specific questions, Terry?
Yes, it's a concern about the timeline logistics. And Lori, you had mentioned about the workload of the PDT, and I know with the upcoming assessment, we're about to lose a number of the PDT members towards that effort. So I'm just wondering if the PDT has had a discussion on the workload and particularly on the further development of some of the outstanding issues. And if you can't answer that right now as we go through them, if you can highlight them in degrees of workload so we know whether or not it's reasonable to include them for further development.
Any other questions, clarification on the presentation from Lori? David?
Yeah, there was just one statement made that I wanted to clarify. It was about a question about whether bottom trawls would be allowed in closed areas in the Gulf of Maine. And I wanted to point out that there is no directed bottom trawl fishery for herring in the Gulf of Maine, that the only fisheries that exist operate under the whiting fishery. And so their time and area is specific, and none of those areas overlap the permanently closed areas. So that question is irrelevant.
Any other questions for Lori? Okay. I guess then the next thing we'll do is we'll go to the decision document that Lori put together. And we'll start from the beginning, which is what, section 3.0?
The first two sections are just goals and objectives. So Roman numeral 3, starting on page 2, addresses the catch monitoring program, which covers sections in the document. That's sections 3.0, 4.0, and 5.0. Along with the funding. In the decision document, the major and minor outstanding issues are on page 3. And then starting on page 7 are the table with the itemized measures. The ones that relate to the catch monitoring program run from pages 7 through 12. And for the most part, in my view, you know, a lot of these measures are ready to go move forward to the draft EIS. You can see the ones that are gray that still are not ready, along with the major and minor issues in the table on page 3. Again, I think in my presentation I had mentioned some of the issues can be addressed potentially during the preparation of the draft EIS, but I think the biggest issues that we need to figure out today are the issues related to the port side sampling program, the alternatives for verifying self-reported landings, the funding issues, and then some clarification on the closed area 1 sampling provisions. At least I'm just talking about the catch monitoring program right now.
So I think based on what you just said, the best way to help you and the PDT so that we can get a DEIS cooking would be to go to page 3 and look at the major issues you've identified. Is that right?
Address the major issues on page 3 and make some determination in the tables that relate to the catch monitoring alternatives what to do with the remaining gray shaded rows, which for the catch monitoring program, I believe there's only three of them. There's two of them along with some of the issues that are identified in the table. The two issues the two details, there's a measure in the options to maximize sampling at sea. It's option 12. It's on page 10. a catch deduction and possible trip termination for slippage events. That particular measure has not been revisited by the committee, and there's a lot of questions about that and some details that are not clear. And then the alternatives for verifying self-reported landings on page 11, as I mentioned, the dealer alternative is still pretty unclear. I'm not even sure if the vessel level alternatives are well enough fleshed out. And the other thing I'll note is on page 12, I have the funding options here in the table. And if you notice where it says ready for draft EIS, I'm not sure. I don't know if the funding options are ready for the draft EIS because I don't know what's entailed in the details. I don't know what has to be in there other than we say that the vessels are going to be responsible for paying for the at-sea sampling. So I'm not sure if those are ready. So, yeah, any of those issues that could be resolved along with some determination as to what's going to move forward in this section.
Dave.
Yeah. Laurie, I continue to have concerns, and these are kind of a general statement, but it applies to this section, so I'll start here that we've continued to lump A, B, and C together and then treat the D category separately. And it should be, in my opinion, that the A and B boats are one set of alternatives and the C and D boats are the other, because they operate at fundamentally different levels of scale, and they have different issues. So, for example, as you mentioned in one place there, that the river herring bycatch may be higher in the bottom trawl fishery. Those are C and D boats, and the A and B boat shouldn't be tagged with that issue if that's the case. We can't have one size fits all here. It's not going to work. And the same with some of these quota monitoring and transfer at sea provisions. They're not going to work for the C&D boats as they're written. The guy who catches a couple dozen herring on a D boat and transfers six of them to his buddy to use for tuna bait is not going to go through all these reporting requirements that we have outlined here. It's just simply they're either going to do it illegally and you'll never stop it, or they're going to they're going to throw the stuff over the side, and that's a National Standard 8 concern. We can't increase bycatch when we're trying to decrease it. A person's not going to, as an example, become a dealer to transfer 200 pounds of herring at sea that are worth $40 and go through the hassle of all this stuff. They're just not going to do it. So I really think, I've said it from day one, that we need two complete sets of alternatives for all of these, one for the A and B boats and one for the C and D. And otherwise, I think we're going to have a document that's fundamentally unworkable. So that would be a consideration that I'd urge throughout the document. And the other question I had in regards to looking at some of the alternatives on pages 14 and 15, it's unclear to me, do we still have status quo in here as an option? So for the transfer at sea and stuff? Okay, it's not listed, and I didn't know if it was still an option or not. Thank you.
So then, Dave, based on what you said, we'd need a motion that says that for monitoring alternatives, there should be an option that applies to A and B only. And then you could either have one that's A, B, C, another one that's A, B, C, D, or you could have A, B only, and then an option for C and an option for D, and go out to the public. And then when you come back, the council can review everything through the committee process and the AP process, come back to the final vote, and you can pick option one, which is A, B, and option two, which is C, and option three, which is D, or any variation.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I had thought of A and B and C and D, just two options, just to keep it relatively simple. But I don't have a problem with, since you've already got A, B, and C in here generally throughout the document, keeping that in there. But all right, I will make a motion that for catch monitoring to develop alternatives for the category A and B permits, and another set of alternatives for the C and D permits.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mike Leary. Discussion? Terry?
I'm actually opposed to that particular way of doing it. I feel more comfortable with the suggestion that you made, Mr. Chairman. The committee put forward A, B, and C, and then had a significant discussion about whether or not D permits should be included. I think we should go out to public hearing with A, B, and C as one category and D as a second. Off the cuff, I would say that for the monitoring component here, we don't need to be inclusive of D permits, but for the river herring component, we would. And so I would be opposed to this motion.
Is it a motion to amend?
Yes. But actually, it wouldn't have to be. It would be that would be status quo.
Okay. Mary Beth.
Yeah, I guess a question for Lori. I just wonder if we need to be concerned about this, and if she thinks that the PDT can craft this in such a way that the public is clear that some of these alternatives may apply to all categories and some may not. And then through the public hearing process, if people have issues, they could identify them, and hopefully we would try to deal with them. What David described for a D permit, some people are doing that, and so that's one set of concerns. But we also have people who are now fishing dedicated herring trips for 6,600 pounds under the open access permit. And this is a trip limit, and that is why the PDT in different discussions that have come up have said, or the agency actually expressed the concern, if we have trip limits and we allow them to transfer at sea, how do you enforce the trip limit? What does the trip limit mean in that circumstance when, you know, they could have transferred at any point? So this was an issue that was raised by the regional office. If people have concerns about how it you know, plays in reality, then they could make comments during the public hearings. So I'm just asking, Lori, if we leave it the way it is, as Terry proposes, and you say that some of these measures may apply to Category D as well, is that a problem for the analysis of the document? I think moving forward as it is, I'm pretty clear. It's pretty clear what measures apply to A, B, and C. Because it's really all of the catch monitoring provisions, and A, B, and C are your limited access permit holders. That's relatively clear. There's still this little bit of uncertainty about the D permit holders. And I think we're going to have to clarify that as we move through the process in order to get a real good analysis done. I'm less concerned about measures like provisions on transfers at sea and things like that, and more concerned about measures that are going to have economic impacts on the vessels, for example, requirements to pay for observer coverage and things like that. I'd be concerned about moving forward with a suite of alternatives and saying these may apply to just A and B vessels. Another option is they may apply to A, B, and C vessels. And another option is they may apply to A, B, C, and D vessels, because what you've just done is tripled the amount of analytical work that would be required to sort of get a real good sense of what the economic impacts of some of these measures will be. So, I mean, I think that whatever decisions are made, we need to be as clear as possible in the document about which vessels the provisions are going to apply to. So anywhere where we can clarify that is going to help the analysis. It's not, I mean, whatever decisions are made, we can do the analysis as long as we know which vessels we're talking about. What's not, where the problem comes in is where it might be this group of vessels or it might be this other group of vessels, and we're going to decide later.
Lori, your page 3 clearly says Category D open access permit holders. You're asking the council to clarify catch monitoring provisions and requirements for Category D. So you've identified this as something that's important for the PDT to know in terms of the analysis that you have to do prior to going out to the public.
Right, and I think it needs to be clarified in some places, but, maybe I need to think about the catch monitoring program a little bit more. I just think that one of the major issues in that kind of plays throughout all of the alternatives in the amendment is a lack of clarity as to which vessels the measures are going to apply to. Maybe it's not a showstopper for the catch monitoring program. I think it's a bigger issue with the river herring measures and the Category D vessels, but there is... It's not entirely clear, and the problem that we have is some of these measures in the document are going to increase the possession limits for some Category D permit holders and not for others and things like that. So right now, the catch monitoring provisions apply to A, B, and C, but a lot of the provisions affect D. And I guess that's where there's a little bit of uncertainty is how those effects are going to play out and what the impacts are actually going to be on the D vessels. But I think David's point that he's trying to address in the motion is a little bit different.
David.
Yeah. As somebody who I think is well-versed in this process, I spent a day and a half with this document trying to figure out, as somebody with a C permit, what potential measures I would have to comply with. And I think I did it, but I'm not sure. You know, some things apply to A and B, some are A, B, and C, some are A, B, C, and D, some are unspecified. So you're not, people aren't going to be able to comment at the public hearing if they can't understand what it is that they're commenting on. And that's why what I'm trying to do is, I've said it from day one, A and B and C and D are fundamentally different fisheries. C and D are people that are in other fisheries that catch herring. A and B are the directed herring fishery. And I know it gets real muddied when you have people, because of the way you have to register with the VMS, say they're targeting herring, but they're doing it under another fishery. They're not out there targeting herring because they have to be in another fishery to do it. They should be saying they're targeting whiting or they're targeting whatever it is. But that's the way it's been interpreted at the service level, so that's what you have to register for. If you think you're going to catch a herring, you have to put down herring in the VMS code, even if you might never catch one. And, you know, as an example, I went and looked up my own catch last year before I fell off the pier for 6 weeks. I caught 19,500 pounds of herring. And from looking at this document, as a Category C permit holder, I could be subject to monitoring requirements that vastly exceed the value of those fish. Vastly. Plus, they make my business non-viable because my business is transfer at sea. It's not bringing them to the pier. So the minute you eliminate the transfer at sea or make it prohibitively impossible to do, I only have one alternative. That's throw them over the side. And if that's what we want to do, then we can keep going the way we're going right now because that's what's going to happen. But if that's not what you want to do, then you've got to split this all the way down the line. A set of rules for A and B, a set of rules for C and D. And that's why I made this motion.
Paul Howard. I can just say we're going to be here a long time if we get on this route, but why can't we just agree to, for analysis purposes, for the whole document, that you break it up into three groups, A, B, C, A, B, C, and D, and A and B, and C and D, and you do three sets of analysis for every time there's a section that applies to permits. Can we do that? Otherwise, you'd want the council to pick and choose at every stretch of the way who it applies to, instead of doing it in one lump sum.
Okay. Well, we can do whatever you guys want to do. I think it will, you know, I mean, these are just things that are going to, you know, complicate the document as we go down the road and confuse issues a little bit, but we can do that kind of analysis. What I'm reading here in David's motion is that the catch monitoring alternatives, if this motion were to pass, the provisions in the catch monitoring section of the document would apply to A and B vessels, and there would be another section of the document developed that would apply to C and D vessels. So, you know, that's my interpretation of this motion. That might help to clarify some of the uncertainties about D vessels, or we can take the approaches that have been suggested and just analyze across different groups of permit categories. I just want to mention that right now the D vessels are not included in the catch monitoring program. I would strongly urge that we don't develop an alternative that includes 2,200 D permit holders because of notification requirements and all kinds of things that were never intended to apply to those vessels when we developed this catch monitoring program. So if, you know, if we want to take the approach of looking at A and B and then looking at C either separately or A, B, and C, we can do that. But I think we want to at least be clear about the D permit holders in that respect.
Laurie, are there options for monitoring for all groups right now? In other words, I don't think it's the intent of the council today to say we want a whole new suite of options for D vessels or for C vessels. I think that what the council in the motions is saying, that whatever you have now for monitoring, whatever you have now for payment, whatever you have now, it either applies to A, B, and C, A, B, C, and D, or A and B and C and D. And we're not going to develop any new motions, options, because it's been 3 years. We've got to get on with it. That's what I think we're saying. Three options for who all this applies to,
right,
under every section.
That's fine. And what I'm suggesting is please don't include D in that, because the catch monitoring program was not, the D permit holders were never intended to be part of that. And so if we want to do that, that's fine. I think this issue that's in the motion, though, is still a little bit different. I mean, what the motion is essentially saying is that C should be treated different than A and B. So I don't know if you want to maybe reword this motion to say, you know, to develop the analysis based on it applying, based on the catch monitoring program applying to A, B, and C, and then a second analysis on A and B only, or something like that. I don't know if that would satisfy David's concerns, but I think his motion is still a little bit different. And I think one way or the other, you know, that issue as to whether C should be treated differently needs to be addressed. And regarding the D permit holders, I think we can square that one away just by clarifying some of the stuff in the document already.
I'm going to go back to your document, and I have a question. Your first major outstanding issue is how do we deal with Ds? Currently, as the document, the amendment's written, there is no mention of D under catch monitoring.
Currently, the catch monitoring program is not proposed to apply to D permit holders.
Okay.
The issue, as we move through the draft EIS, is just to be clear on what does apply to D permit holders. And given how wrapped up we've gotten around this issue, I'm actually sorry I included it in the table, because I think we can probably clarify it just through, you know, working through the issue. But part of the clarification, I think, will come with a decision on whether A, B, and C are treated separately, or whether C is treated separately from A and B. Sorry, I know this is very confusing.
No, I think I get it. I mean, basically, I'll go back to what I said before. You have an option that applies to A and B only and an option that applies to C. You do your analysis. How do these monitoring measures in here impact the C permit holder class? How do they impact the A and B permit holder class independent of each other? Right?
And we can do that.
Right. So really, I think that's what Dave's talking about. The analysis could bear out that it's cost prohibitive for C permit holders to go through this monitoring regime. Could point out that it's too cost prohibitive for A and B as well. We'll learn that when we have the analysis. This lumps in permit category D, right? Which is an open access permit, right? Okay.
The problem is, as Mary Beth pointed out, that some of the D permits will land in quite a bit more fish than the C permits. You can't just ignore the D permits altogether. A person, you know, fishing 100 days at 6,600 pounds could have a fair amount of fish, whereas a guy next to him was fishing a C permit for whiting using 2.5-inch mesh that's letting most of the herring go has substantially less. And you're saying, well, I don't have to monitor the D permits because they don't count, but the C permits are incredibly important. It really is a very big distinction here, especially when you get to the river herring stuff, because then you're probably going to have to monitor everybody if you're serious about monitoring this. And whether I like it or not, that's why I, you know, have done this. It is very specific to split this up across the board, because the C and the D are more closely allied in what they catch than the A and the B. And yet we have them split up A, B, and C. Now, if you want to split it out as C separate and ignore D, I think that's a mistake. But, you know, that's certainly everybody's prerogative.
Doug.
Yeah, I agree with Laurie. This document, as I went through this past week and looked at what the catch monitoring part, I'm just talking about the catch monitoring part. The only part that I found that applied to D permits in the catch monitoring part was there was an option there that we had that A, B, C, and D vessels had to transfer to people with A, B, and C, or D permits. That was the only place I found a D in there, that the entire catch monitoring that we've been going through developing over the past 2 or 3 years has been based on A, B, and C. And so I agree with you that if we're trying to get at Dave's analysis at this point in time, we should be looking at having an analysis for A and B and an analysis for C. And that will get us this the information we need to make some decisions on for people to make the public comments on. Notwithstanding Dave's comments there, the point is, for the past 2 or 3 years, monitoring has been focused on A, B, and C, and that's what's in this document, all the limited access vessels.
Mary Beth?
Just a question for Lori. Are the transfer at C alternatives applicable to Category D?
Yes.
Anything further on the motion on the board? Pat?
I guess I'm still a little confused where the motion on the board would leave us. It seems to me, I agree that the monitoring has mostly been focused on A and B, but I think that's been one of the shortcomings that's been identified, that we don't really have a good handle on what's happening in C and D. And so I do think that there needs to be some changes to the monitoring program for both of those categories, but I'm not sure it would be the same for each one. So if you lump A and B, I think that's fine, but then I would probably want to treat C and D differently. And the way I would see it is it's almost a tiered type system where tier one monitoring requirements apply to everyone. Tier 2 monitoring requirements maybe only apply to A and B or A, B, and C. Tier 3 might just be A and B. But we're not developing 4 different sets of monitoring requirements either. So I think it's just a question of what are the requirements and then which category do they most appropriately apply to.
Anyone else in the council? Mary Beth?
Well, I agree with what Pat just said. So I guess just before we vote on this motion, I think the way she described it would be status quo, maybe. Did I interpret that wrong? You added D. So I think what you just said would be that we develop the alternatives. They may apply to any permit category, including D, and that would be the approach that you thought would be the way to go. And then Lori had a concern about adding the 2,000 permits under Category D. But, you know, really, out of those permits, not many of them actually land herring. And Dave described one issue, which, you know, for tuna people, and really that's like catching, you know, bait for personal use. And do those people really need a permit? If you have a commercial tuna license on a boat and you want to catch herring for personal use, do you need to have this open category, you know, Category D permit? Does anybody know that?
Yes.
So would you be better off if somebody's catching it for personal use and not for commercial use to have a different category? Then they would need to comply with any of this if they're keeping it for personal use and not selling the fish. I mean, to me, that seems like a better resolution than some of these other alternatives. Because, I mean, 2,000 permits, I mean, they're really not all going herring fishing or even seeing herring. They're checking a box.
Anyone else on the council on the motion on the board? Take some limited comment from the audience. Anyone wishing to speak in favor? Against? That was limited. Back to the council. Lori, before we vote on this, can you tell me and the council what you think this does to the monitoring options in the document, how you will proceed?
If this motion passes, that's a good question. If this motion passes, then the proposed catch monitoring provisions would be analyzed just specific to the A and B vessels. And I mean, I guess we'd have to do the analysis of the A and B as one group, and the analysis of C and D as another group, and or actually, what we'd probably have to do is go back and try to lay out what the alternative looks like for the C and D vessels based on what's in the document. Right now, it's proposed to apply to A, B, and C, with some provisions that are going to be required of D. This, I guess, would mean that we would apply it to A and B and go back and sort of try to revisit what the provisions would be for C and D and then do the analysis on that. It would take a little bit of rewriting of the document. This is, it essentially takes the sea boats out of the equation for at-sea monitoring and portside sampling and things like that. And so we'd have to go back and revisit, if they're not going to be subject to those requirements, what requirements they would be subject to.
I guess I had a different impression of what this motion would do, and you know, maybe other council members agree or disagree, but I basically looked at this motion and said, if this passes, then you're going to go through all the monitoring provisions and analyze it against the AB class vessel. And you can do the same thing, but analyze it for the CD class of vessels.
So your interpretation would be that this motion would actually take everything in the document. So this would be more restrictive because it would now subject the C and the D vessels to the catch monitoring program. I mean, I think the intention was, under David's motion, was to get the sea vessels out and look at regulations for the sea vessels separate from A and B and potentially more similar to D. I think your interpretation just brought C and D into the catch monitoring program, and the analysis would just look at them separately.
David?
Yeah, I agree with John. That was my intent, was to take the C and the D and put them together and do the analysis and show whether or not all these alternatives are doable for the C and D vessels. And I want the D vessels in there because I think that while there are a lot of them that only have a couple dozen herring, there are a lot of them that are catching more than the sea boats. And I mean, we've got to do this analysis across all the permits and see what the economic and social results are.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. If that's the case, can we change the word alternatives and alternative to analysis? So it would be to develop analysis for the A and B permits and another analysis for the C and D permits?
Doug?
Laurie, don't you think that the analysis for C permits would be vastly different than what they would be for D permits? Based on these objectives, what would come out as to the impacts to each of them? Because one's a limited access vessel that requires BMS and already, and et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of, so if you're shaking your head, yes, I'll
yes.
Let you.
Yes, I do. And in fact, I think that if we go down this road, we're going to end up having to separate C and D and look at them separately.
So my question here, actually, I think I'd like to make a motion to substitute here. And the motion to substitute would be to develop analysis for the Category A and B permits and another analysis for C, and another and a separate analysis for D. And this all applies to the impacts from the catch monitoring provisions here. If there's a second.
Is there a second on the motion to substitute? Seconded by Mary Beth. Doug.
And just to my justification, while I can understand Dave saying that they're very similar vessels in how they fish, they fish under different trip limits. They have different requirements already for what they have to have on board VMS, et cetera. So the analysis is going to be just a little bit different, and the impacts could be different to each of them. So I think this may get us around, if this motion passes, I think this will simplify how we move forward because, as I said, this whole catch monitoring alternative up until now has been primarily focused on A, B, and C, except for the mackerel fishery. Those with mackerel permits, we had some exceptions in there for that we'd have additional monitoring requirements for those with mackerel permits fishing in Area 2 and 3 under the increased trip limits.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I seconded this because this motion is clear. The previous motion, people were interpreting in a variety of different ways and was not clear. And this reflects what Pat said, which that was the approach that I agreed with. So that's why I seconded the motion and I support it.
Terry.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to follow up on that. Doug, is that your intention that this analysis leads towards the nesting that Pat was talking about? Because here we are on our first issue, and I was afraid we're already starting to shoot 2.5 years worth of work. So,
my intent was to take what we have in here and base the analysis on what's in here, an analysis for A and B, analysis for C, analysis for D.
And with the goal of building together for a comprehensive monitoring program.
Correct.
Anything further on the motion to substitute? Okay. You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous, 17. Now I have to vote on the motion as main motion is substituted. Same question. Anything further? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous, 17. Dr. Pierce.
Okay, John, I'd like to move forward to the first shaded block, which is on page 10 of the decision document. It's in reference to section 4.3.13, catch deduction and possible trip termination of slippage events. So this is one of a number of options within the section dealing with improving and maximizing the sampling at sea and measures to address net slippage. I've had many, many nights of troubled sleep because of this particular issue that stretches back to, I think, the beginning of 2009, maybe earlier than that, actually. Yes, it does go back earlier than that. Maybe it's December of 2008. And that's the history of the decisions on net slippage is very well documented by Lori in document number 3, where she shows a summary of all of the motions made going back to March of 2008. And when you move through the document, you come to a number of very important pieces, very important time periods. And one is on, let's see here, I'll move forward a little bit. March, page 6, March 30 through 31st, a two-day meeting where we tasked, at the bottom of the page, we tasked the PDT to develop trip termination options for slippage events applicable to different gear types, vessel sizes, and observer rates. And then jump forward a little bit to page 7, four months later, in July, another two-day meeting, where you see more references, more actions taken by the committee to deal with slippage, to deal with slippage caps, to deal with trip termination options. On and on it goes. This particular concept of slippage related to trip termination has taken up a lot of time of the committee over the last 2 years. And we've had to deal with competing ideas, different offerings from the public, you know, from the industry. This was a tough one. The plan development team was very helpful on this issue, of course, as were the industry advisors and all of the offerings, all of the suggested approaches. So after laboring on this concept and deciding not to establish slippage caps, deciding not to have any trip termination options, it led me in particular to move forward with a suggestion to the committee that was adopted, was supported, and that's the one shown on page 48 of the draft discussion document. That's option 12, the one that's in shaded on page 10 of our decision document. So you can see that option 12 has a couple of comments that Laurie appropriately has inserted regarding the need for additional information, additional discussion and development. And let me highlight why I feel it's okay as it is, perhaps with a little bit more refinement, but as it stands right now, this is the only strategy in this document that deals with a major concern of those who have expressed their concern about what is being slipped. Okay, the definition of slippage is in this document. It's release catch that is not brought on board. All sorts of controversy regarding what's being slipped, how much is being slipped, how much sea herring is being released and not counted, what's in that bag, et cetera, and on we go. So I suggested that in the context of the second paragraph in option 12 on page 48, where when a vessel operator finds that pumping the catch could compromise the safety of the vessel or mechanical failure precludes bringing some or all of the catch aboard the vessel, it occurred to me after listening to the public that there was great concern, I think justifiable concern, that an observer on board a boat may not really know whether or not safety of the vessel was being compromised, and maybe something in the catch that the vessel operator doesn't want to bring on board. He's going to slip it. So how does he do that? He just says, well, safety of my vessel is in jeopardy. I have to slip this. Or he can say, there's mechanical failure. I can't bring some or all of the catch on board. So it's just not detected. That led me to believe that there had to be some disincentive, something that would provide the captain to actually bring the fish on board or to avoid situations where they might actually be in a position where they would have to slip large amounts of catch. So my logic and the committee agreed and also I wanted to avoid the trip termination concept because at one point in time we said, if you slip a bag, your trip is terminated. You come home. And that just seemed very unreasonable in light of the fact that there could very well be times when safety is jeopardized, when there are mechanical failures. It's inappropriate to make the vessel go home to terminate the trip. So considering all those factors, why not have the strategy that provides this disincentive to slip by saying that if you have a situation where you feel you must slip your catch, then with an observer on board, the amount that is slipped will count as 100,000 pounds. So that is the disincentive. It counts against the ACL, the sub-ACL for the management area. It counts against the quota. The vessels know that. Why 100,000 pounds? Well, I don't have the data in front of me. It's been a long time since I've looked at that data. But it seemed to me that it was in the range of observed slip trips and the data provided to us by the observers. It seemed to be a sufficient disincentive. It seemed to be a reasonable and appropriate number to use, 100,000 pounds. We can debate that, of course, but that was the number we used. All right. To carry the strategy forward a little bit to make it effective regarding slippage, the additional disincentive was, and is described here in that second bullet, once 10 slippage events are observed in a particular management area, each additional slippage event, for reasons specified in 1 and 2 above, will cause trip termination, and the vessel will be required to return to port. So you get the disincentive, you deal with slippage, trying to account for slippage, you deal with how the vessel captain may try to disguise the amount of fish that is being slipped and the reasons why, and you get that trip termination concept brought in to the strategy. So to me, it's clear. You've got the observer on board. The observer sees all of this happening. If a catch is slipped, it counts as 100,000 pounds. The observer notes that. It gets reported, of course, in that way. And then eventually, across the fleet, if reports come in and we find out that there have been more than 10 slippage events, then whenever a boat goes out again, they will know that if they slip again, indeed they will have slipped, they'll have to terminate their trip for every additional time they feel they have to slip their catch. So I'm very comfortable with option 12. I think it's a very important component of the amendment. It deals with many of the issues that have been discussed and hotly debated over the last 2 years. I see no other alternative to this relative to slippage and how to deal with these concerns about caps and trip termination. It's a blend of how to deal with those issues. So a little long-winded, I know, but this is an important concept for me, and I don't want to see it deleted for any particular reason, one reason being that it's shaded. Now, Lori, of course, can elaborate as to why she feels this is just still too sketchy and it's not doable. But if it is sketchy, let's work out the details and retain it in the amendment. That's my suggestion, Mr. Chairman, not to strike it, but to just keep it in there.
Okay, so you like what you liked before.
And what the committee said they liked as well.
Right. But there's no specific recommendations for changing it right now. You'd like to see it go out to the public, and perhaps some of the questions and issues that the PDT has addressed, the public may help us understand some of these concerns and come up with some solutions. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. However, I'm also sensitive to the fact that Lori has to do all the hard work. And if she still feels that something is not quite right, if she's still uncomfortable with it, if she needs more details, and obviously she has said that she does because it's shaded, we need to provide her with that assistance if we can today. Nevertheless, I really want this to go out to public hearing. I think in light of, again, all that's been said about this over the last 3 years or so, we'll get a lot of comment on this, a constructive comment, that would enable us to, I hope, when all is said and done, effectively deal with this whole issue of slip catch.
Mary Beth?
I think that there are some significant issues with this. It's a little unclear to me exactly what the goal of this section is, and I think that we would need to define that. I mean, is the goal to ensure that the observer on board views all of the catch? Because if that's the goal, then I think you can get there a different way. I mean, it depends. Or is the goal to disincentivize slippage, which some people think is an issue? Because if that's the goal, I don't know how you get there when you're going to have penalize vessels for mechanical failures. I mean, they're working 24/7 to avoid mechanical failures. But if they have a mechanical failure and then this is going to apply, then I don't think there's an incentive there for that. So I think first you have to define what you're trying to achieve, and then figure out if this meets that goal. You know, it doesn't address dogfish. It doesn't, you know, deal with, well, I guess safety of the vessel is broad enough, so that's fine. But, you know, when you're loading a herring vessel that's tanked and weight is important and stability, there's a lot of issues that come up. And so it depends on what you want to get at. I mean, if we go back to the concept of the observer, can you pump the fish across the deck? This says bring on board. The Coast Guard's commented in the past that that's problematic. It needs work, and not impossible, but I can't quite see us getting that done here today.
Terry?
Thanks. I agree with much of David's thoughts and suspect that the public comments that we'll receive if this goes out will address the issues that Mary Beth has just raised, but this goes back to my earlier question to Lori. I mean, is from the PDT perspective and trying to pull this document together, is this doable? You flagged it. And Mary Beth has raised a lot of issues that we're going to have to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I flagged it is because the PDT raised a lot of concerns about this measure, and we just didn't have the time to get back to it at the committee. Had we been able to get back to it at the committee, maybe it wouldn't have come forward as gray, but we just haven't revisited it. And, I mean, some of the issues, some of the concerns, I actually, when I sent this particular measure out, I got more responses from the PDT members expressing concerns than almost any other measures that we've talked about in the document. And, we haven't gone into too much detail, but a lot of the concerns, I mean, 100,000 some PDT members felt was relatively arbitrary. But putting that aside, there were concerns about how this 100,000-pound deduction was going to occur from a quota that's being monitored. You know, if the vessel has to report catch, do they just tack on another 100,000? And what if they fished across two management areas? Does the 100,000, which management area does the 100,000 pounds come off of? And then, you know, if the vessel is responsible for reporting this deduction or reporting this extra fish that really didn't get, well, that got slipped, that how do we resolve the differences in the data sets for quota monitoring purposes? I mean, one of the things that we're trying to do in this amendment is get the dealer data consistent with the VTR data, consistent with the IVR or VMS data. So now if you're going to take deductions of fish, you're not going to see those fish in the dealer data. They're going to come in the catch reports. You're going to have to track. There's going to have to be separate tracking of these fish, or at least some way to mark these fish as something different than fish that actually got sold to the dealers. So there was a lot of concern that this could actually cause discrepancies in the data sets that are going to have to be dealt with in the future, you know, along with the whole issue of how to deal with trips that cross more than one management area and, of course, how to keep observers out of an enforcement-type role. So, again, these are, you know, potentially these can all be resolved. But they're pretty significant issues from the PDT's perspective, not necessarily on analyzing this measure, but I think the analysis really is just going to be sort of an identification and discussion of some of these complicating factors when it comes to tracking quota in different management areas and trying to resolve discrepancies between all of the data sets that we have. So that's just, maybe these are resolvable. The fact is the committee just didn't have a chance to get back and resolve them.
Yeah, tracking quota, of course, is important, but more importantly is the fact that it leads to a trip termination, which is, the penalty that would be incurred from continued slipping of catch. Now, is the number 10 correct? Well, it seemed to me that it was a reasonable number to use, especially since with fishermen knowing that they have 10 opportunities in which to deal with mechanical failures or some safety concerns that they would again have the motivation not to be slipping catch allegedly because of a mechanical problem or safety concern. So I don't feel it's insurmountable. I can understand why the plan development team has some questions and some concerns, but once again, it's just my attempt to reconcile the different points of view and to come up with a reasonable compromise on this issue to bring the public hearing. And, you know, the committee, you know, did agree with me at the time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I agree with Lori's comment. I think this was just a matter of the PDT didn't have the chance to reanalyze it with all the other tasks that we put on them. It was clearly when this motion was made, it was made as a please help develop this option. I think some of the issues that Lori and the PDT brought up here, such as how these events can be tracked and the resulting discrepancies can be addressed. I mean, clearly right now, the way we're the status quo is we base things on RVR unless the dealer reports say that they're higher, then it gets adjusted by that. What could be done? Clearly, we'd have a case here if they're required to report on their VTR. We could also put in a requirement, which is one of the options here, that they have to fill out a catch affidavit. So that's another tracking mechanism for it. I think there are clearly ways that this can be addressed, and they should be the catch, if it's a slip catch, should be considered in the landings database because these fish are have already been netted and brought up and probably are part of the mortality stream here. So, and it's one of the objectives we were looking at, was trying to get some kind of improve the amount, our estimates of harvest and dead herring in this fishery.
Yeah, well, I'll probably ask the same question. I'm probably going to ask it with every one of these. Is this just for A and B boats, or is this for everybody? But C don't pump. This says pump. So, I mean, again, I'm raising these issues because, we've got to resolve them. But I also think, in regards to the broader question, the enforcement committee weighed in on this, which I'm a member of, and we're very concerned with safety at sea about, requiring people to do things. And I like giving people an option. So, I mean, I would suggest that you have two options. Either pump it across the deck so that the observer can measure it and quantify it in some way, or terminate the trip. The choice is yours. I don't care which. Something simple, easily understandable. I'm not in favor of this 100,000 pounds because, again, I'll go back to a Category D permit. It's got a 6,600-pound trip limit. You're going to tag them for 100,000 pounds? This is a little bit crazy. The same with the C. The 55,000 trip limit, boat only holds 10,000, but you're going to tag him for 100,000 because he's got a bag of dogfish and he can't put it in the boat? I really think this has to be thought out a lot more. There's a lot of issues here if you're going to apply it across the fleet. But I do think that instead of charging people an arbitrary amount of fish, whatever category of permit they have, that you should give them an option of either put it on deck so it can be weighed and measured, or terminate the trip. I know for myself personally, if I got a big bag of dogfish, I'd be more than happy to terminate the trip and to leave them out there. But, some people may wish to put the whole mess on deck so they can go try another tow somewhere. So, I don't think this option's ready for prime time at the moment.
Just to clarify, this option is intended to apply to A, B, and C vessels. Not all sea vessels pump fish, but there are some that do. In fact, I believe that some of the mackerel vessels that fish in areas two and three are category C vessels. And that's been one of the complicating things about whether or not to include the sea vessels in the catch monitoring program. I mean, some of them are relatively big vessels that pump fish. The idea here would be that this would apply to any vessels that pump fish. Those would be the vessels that would slip catch. I remembered one more of the issues that the PDT raised. And this is, again, these could potentially all be resolvable. But, on some of the multi-day trips, you could end up in a situation here where a 10th slippage event would occur, say, on day one of a trip, that wouldn't, the boat, you know, the trip may occur over a four-day period, and by the time the boat lands, the observer tallies up the information and communicates it to the regional office or whatever. I mean, it could be a week after that slippage event happened. If that is the 10th event where after that boats would be required to terminate their trips, I mean, there could have been, there will be a period of time where additional slippage events could occur, that by the time we go back and figure it out, we've already surpassed number 10. So that was another issue. This whole option I view as a minor issue. If you guys want to move it forward now, recognizing that some of these issues remain unresolved, we may just get to the point in the draft EIS where if we can't resolve them, we need to drop this option out.
Yeah, I don't really see them as minor issues, and that was a question I had. Does this apply to the fleet, you know, cumulative 10 times, or does it apply per vessel? You have to look at, you know, it applies only when observers on board, and yet the information we have from observers is that these are rare events. So do you need to have all this complicated stuff in here for what is considered a rare event? How is this going to apply to purse seines? I don't see it working for purse seine at all. There's a lot of issues here, and we would need to work through all those issues. I am still unclear what the goal is for this, and if I knew that, then maybe there'd be a way to address that goal with some other measures. But these measures need a lot of work, in my opinion. And do we need to do that now? Do we need to task the committee to go back and look at this? I mean, it's up to the council, and I don't really, you know, either way is fine, but they need to be addressed, and I still don't understand what the goal is. It's problematic.
Dr. Pierce, I believe way back when you raised the issue, you did talk about the goals and the struggles the committee's had to address slippage. Is that the point of this option? It's a way to get at slippage?
Yes, it is. And again, this particular, simply stated, yes, it is. It's how to get at the question of slippage, which was a burning red-hot topic for months, with polarized views as to how to deal with it. Is slippage a problem? Yes. Is slippage a problem? No, not at all. Polarized views. Many letters were written. Phone calls made, emails exchanged, people getting to the microphone, parading back and forth to the microphone on this issue. So that's why I would like to bring it up to public hearing. Let's get some more comment on this particular concept as one option in the suite of options, with an understanding, of course, that this does apply to the situations when observers are on board. There may be some misunderstanding here, thinking that if an observer is not on board, then the captain would still have to live by this particular rule. It would be counted as 100,000 pounds, but it would not be. It's when there's an observer on board. So I recognize the concerns of other council members about this particular option. I recognize, but again, I'm recognizing the concerns of those who have been so strongly in for and so strongly against.
Yeah, I thought I remember back along that somebody flushed through a lot of the observer data and that slippage was not a real issue. But the other point I wanted to bring up is it seems to me that we're putting the observers into a policing situation. It would be definitely a much different mechanism than we've used observers for in the past. I mean, most fisheries are having observers just observe, and this type of thing is actually making them be almost the judge and the jury to decide if something was even slipped. I mean, if half a dozen red hake pop up at the end of pumping, which happens quite regular, I've seen it, did they slip? I think maybe, you know, the purpose of this was to get better monitoring. I think it's something that you monitor going forward and see if slippage is a problem. I don't think it is a big problem. Nobody wants to slip 100,000 pounds of herring. They want to bring them home. I mean, they're worth money. It's just a natural event that they want to bring them in. So I'm really worried about the direction this is going, and I'm really especially worried that we're putting the we're making the observer program a lot different than it is now. And I don't know if we're prepared for that.
Is anyone looking to make, willing to make, or prepared to make a motion concerning this this issue in the document right now? Mary Beth?
I would make a motion that we delete section 4.3.13, I believe is the number, that would be catch deduction and possible trip termination for slippage events at this time in the document, because I think it leads a lot of work and it's not ready to move. The PDT has a lot of concerns and the industry has a lot of concerns.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jimmy. Anyone wishing on the council wishing to speak against the motion? Doug?
Yeah, I disagree. I think we need to have this option at least for some kind of analysis. Whether we choose it or not is at the end is another thing. I think there are details that can be worked out, and if, for example, we could, to get a better analysis, we could have, depending on how this motion goes, we could have two amounts of herring that would be applied to the landing stream. You could say 50,000 or 100,000. As far as Lori's concern about what happens if the 10th slippage event occurs and then more slippage events occur before we are able to get it in the stream, you could make that criteria where once the 10th slippage event is takes place and is documented, then the next slippage event after the regional administrator has issued a notice on this, that's when this measure would go into effect that would cause trip termination. You'd have to give the regional administrator a chance to notify the vessels that from now on, if you're going to slip, it'd be a trip termination. There's a lot of ways that this can be, these things can be addressed. The question that Dave had, clearly Lori indicated that these were supposed to be applied to limited access vessels that pump. And so we just need to put that wording in there, that this is what this applies to. So I think, you know, I agree with Dave. I think we can move forward with this as an option. It just needs to be developed a little more. If we have to spend the time here adding this stuff in, we can, or we could verbally ask the PDT to come up with these options based on some of the comments that have been made here at the council meeting.
Karen, the seconder was Jim Odlin. Someone wishing to speak in favor of the motion? In favor? In favor of the motion? Mary Beth?
Well, it's my motion, so I'll speak in favor of it, but I mean, the idea that we would have, you know, penalize fishermen for mechanical failure is just beyond me that we would want to do that. We have a definition of slippage, which doesn't include operational discards. Somebody's going to need to determine at what point. I mean, the observers are going to have to decide, are these operational discards or is this slippage? And it's really difficult. And if you look at the information we have currently, it's a rare event in the fishery because, as Jimmy said, we actually go fishing to bring the fish home. Maybe we should start a list of what's going back to the committee here because this needs to go back to the committee. I don't think the PDT should be the body that fleshes out the details of how this is going to work. And so it's up to the council. If you think it's important enough to send it back to the committee, then let's do that. I mean, if we vote this motion down, that's, I think, what needs to happen here.
Against the motion? Against? Dr. Pierce?
I'm
Okay, it's called option 12, but really there are not 12 options to deal with slippage, not effectively. We need to be careful as to how we look at these particular options, the way they are worded. When you go through the options, you see that there's some nuts and some bolts, some good ideas, some things that should be done as elements of a set of strategies to deal with concerns about slippage. One option that is a significant option, okay, that perhaps we should go with by itself in lieu of the one that I've been defending and championing so strongly, and that's option 10, which is the only other one, really, that has teeth. Closed area one sampling provisions require that all fish must be at least pumped aboard the boat so that the entire catch can be sampled by an observer. And now that's applied to everywhere. Okay. That's pretty harsh, pretty tight, pretty restrictive, but that has problems that have been identified by the industry frequently as to why that may be an unreasonable approach. We'll hear more about that at public hearings, certainly. The only other option here that gets to the issue of slippage, I think in a meaningful way, I feel in a meaningful way, is number 12, the one that that I have described. Other than that, the only option that we're going to bring to public hearing that relates to slippage is bring it all on board so everything can be seen, everything can be counted. You have no option.
In favor of the motion? In favor. In favor of the motion? Terry?
Well, I'm in favor and against. Can I speak?
That wasn't one of the choices.
Well, I agree that it needs more work, but I also feel strongly it needs to be in the document. We didn't have a hearing committee meeting a couple weeks ago, and this could have been one of the issues that we resolved. Process-wise, can we move ahead, hopefully at the end of the day, with whatever comes out of here, convene the committee for this, and I suspect several other issues that we're going to get spinning around today, and then insert them into the document for the PDT to work with?
I mean, it's the council's will. I mean, we can take that up at the end of the day when we look back over what we've done, make that decision.
Then I would make a motion to table this until the end of the day.
To table removing it?
The end of the day would be determined.
I think what you need to do is just vote on the motion one way or the other, and at the end of the day, each individual council member needs to take stock of what the document is that we have and either make a decision to go to DEIS writing or go back to committee. So now I'm going to go to the audience. Anyone wishing to speak in favor of the motion? Mr. Moore?
Thank you. I'm Peter Moore. I work with Norpel in New Bedford, Herring and Mackerel Catching and Processing Company. May I ask a question first before I speak? So I'm confused about why this only applies to vessels that pump. Why wouldn't this slippage issue, which can happen on any vessel, whether they pump or not, why is it only on vessels that pump?
Turn to the committee chair.
I think because on the other vessels, the amount of catch is relatively small compared to the vessels that pump. The vessels that pump are high-volume fisheries. This is my interpretation of it. The vessels that pump are high-volume fisheries, and the vessels that don't pump don't land as much. And so the issue was more with the high-volume fisheries.
Okay. I know that's not true, and it's not. I'm not trying to confront the hearing committee chair, but that's actually not a factual statement. And so I feel like if this is going to apply to vessels that pump, it ought to apply to all vessels catching herring. The second point I want to make is that we have observer data that has been referenced here that talks about what is the incidence of slippage known in the fishery And my understanding is it's minor. The third thing is we have a stock assessment process that has a number of layers of precaution before we even get down to a TAC. And I think that that is somewhat lost in the discussion about sort of hand-wringing over what's the incidence of this and what is the impact on the resource. So I guess if you're going to go ahead with this, I would recommend that this apply to all vessels in the fishery, not just vessels that pump. Otherwise, it's totally discriminatory. Thank you.
As for somebody wants to speak against the motion, against? Don?
Don Swanson, Coastal Conservation Association, New Hampshire. I believe there has to be something in this document about slippage and stuff. And I do agree with Peter that it should involve all vessels in this. Slippage, maybe in the ocean heron might not be that thing, but when you get down to river heron, I think it's a big deal, especially for the recreational fishermen. Thank you.
Okay, one more in favor of the motion. Okay. Seeing none, we'll come back to the council. Jimmy?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out what Peter Moore just said. Some of the biggest fishing vessels in the world don't pump herring. They split them over the stern. So it's you may just force everybody to stop pumping and start splitting. I mean, that's could be the results of something like this. Thank you.
Pat Kirkle.
Just a couple of comments on it. I think I don't see this as an observer responsibility. I see it as the vessel operator's responsibility. When they know when they get to 10, and they should be the ones responsible for returning to port when they do. And that's something that we can monitor after the fact, just to make sure that that they have complied. And then the other thing is we keep hearing it's not a problem and it's a rare event. And if that's true, then they shouldn't be getting to 10 and it should never kick in. So just keep that in mind. And I think the issue of the pumping is a problem that we should look at more closely.
David?
Yeah, I'm going to vote against the motion, but probably for a different reason than everybody else. I will not support in the final document anything that deducts fish from the quota as a punishment, because that punishes everybody for the acts of an individual. And plus, it's entirely arbitrary. Whatever number you pick is an arbitrary number. I would personally think this has to go back to the committee. It needs a lot more work. I agree with Peter Moore. I've seen some very large boats that split over the stern. So you can't just limit it to pumping. I think you have to define exactly what it is you're trying to measure, and then I think you have to come up with alternatives that are enforceable. And those, to me, are one of two things. Either you pump it across the deck so that everybody can see it, or you go home. Those are the two choices. I don't see any other options here. And I don't care what size boat you are, A, B, C, or D. But this, as it's written right now, is going to eat up quota potentially at an alarming rate for the acts of an individual. And that punishes everybody for the acts of one. And I don't see how that's going to be defensible in the document. Thank you.
Anyone hasn't spoke?
Vince?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I understand that the folks go out to catch sea herring. What it seems to me that the states have put a lot of their concern into the value of dockside monitoring as more cost-effective and with the limited resources that we have. And it seems to me in order for the dockside monitoring to be effective, you got to make sure that the encounters at sea are accounted for. So my question is, with a motion like this, if there is somebody does get a bag of river herring and it's simply discarded at sea, how do we pick that up? And when I've said full retention as a strategy and count everything when it comes to the dock, people have come to me and said, what are you going to do about slippage? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
One more, Mary Beth?
Yeah, just a quick question. What Pat just said, was your interpretation, Pat, that this would be per vessel? Because my interpretation was that it was fleet-wide. So there would be no way that a captain would know when somebody hit 10. I mean, if it were per vessel, gee, I would think they could manage 10 quite, you know, quite well. I still don't think you'd want to have mechanical failure in there, but still. But, I mean, my understanding of these measures is that it was a fleet-wide cap per area, and that when any vessel in the fleet hit 10, then all vessels would be subject to the provision. And perhaps I'm not reading it correctly, but... And just, we had a motion to table, but now it's not up there. Did you withdraw the motion to table for later in the day, or?
Anyone else? Pat?
Yeah, I'd like some clarification on that. The way I read it, it's per vessel. So if I misunderstood, then I think it would be helpful if we clarified that. Thanks.
Yeah, it's fleet-wide by area. So it would be 10 slippage events in Management Area 3, 10 observed slippage events in Management Area 3. Or any of the areas.
Okay, it is what it is, with all its warts. So, you ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Two in favor, opposed. Thirteen opposed. Abstentions? Two abstentions. The motion fails. 2-13. Two abstentions. We'll take a 10-minute break. Okay, I guess the next shaded item is section 5.4.2, alternative 2 on page 11 of the decision document. Lori?
Yes, that is the next shaded item in the catch monitoring program, but I guess that item relates to two of the major outstanding issues on page 3, and I think maybe tackling those two major outstanding issues will address that shaded row. One being the issues related to the federal port site sampling program in general, and the second being the alternatives for verifying the self-reported landings. So maybe a larger discussion of those two issues and some resolution of all of those issues will address that gray shaded row.
Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had hoped that we would talk about the portside sampling program first. As Lori suggests, that is an outstanding issue. And the PDT has spent a lot of time talking about protocols for the sampling program. It's unclear how the federal program would actually work. We do have state programs in both Massachusetts and Maine that are very good programs, so there are options in here that would allow those programs to be certified to meet this requirement. But I'm not really sure that developing another third program that would be a federal program is really warranted in this particular instance. The program that the states have has been developed through state scientists. They work very closely, the two states do. You know, we have scientists coming down to the dock taking the subsampling. It's really important that the protocols are followed very closely. The current dockside monitoring program we have for groundfish, those particular, you know, people and what they do, they're not going to be doing those same functions. And so if you think in terms of, okay, we're going to create a whole new group of people that are going to have a whole different training to go through and be certified to actually do this, and when we have states doing it currently at high levels, covering the majority of the fish that are landed and have the ability to do it for all categories, whether or not we really need this. I wouldn't suggest that we would have no federal dockside monitoring of any kind, but I do wonder if we want to have it to address the section and the issues that the states do. We may want to have a federal dockside monitoring program that would be moved to an alternative for verifying self-reported landings, perhaps. I could see how that could function without, you know, so much. It would be simple. And it would mean also that we wouldn't have this, sampling program that goes on by the states that would continue. Clearly, funding is always going to be an issue as you move forward, and that would remain. But I just put that out there. I don't know what people think. I wasn't really prepared to make a motion right off the bat. I thought that particularly where the state representatives are here, what their thoughts were. I think in general, the programs are good. Working cooperatively with the industry, it's a good program. I'm just not sure that we want to go down a road and develop a whole new federal program on top of that, these programs.
Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the issues that I think the council needs to address and discuss here today is the dockside monitoring program as it applies to this third-party verification of the landings and how that applies to how we're going to account for landings towards the ACL. As we have it right now, it's IVRs that can be supplemented by landings by dealer reports if the dealer reports are higher. If we are to implement a portside sampling program with the intent, as we have on page 54, to provide a third-party estimate of the total landings. If you look at page 54 under section 5.3.1.1, the top of the page, the Herring Committee identified the following sampling priorities for the portside sampling program, providing a third-party estimate for the total landings, and this is addressing our objective 2C for the program. Now, if we do implement this, is this going to be for those trips where we have portside sampling, are we going to use this over the IVR and dealer reporting for measuring our progress towards the ACL here. If we're not, then that probably, if we're going to rely on something else, if we're still going to use IVR, or we've got a proposal in here for VMS with dealer landings, then that makes it a very different scenario. Right now, I think the state programs have a very good dockside monitoring program that addresses all those things, but it doesn't, as far as I know, and I'll ask Dave and Terry to confirm this for me, being the third-party estimate of total landings? Those aren't going into the data stream, and we don't want to. So I think this is a very important issue that we need to come to a decision on. Are we going to use these dockside monitors as the third-party estimate? And if so, are we going to put that as, for that particular trip, this is what the catch was, as opposed over the IVR and the dealer reports?
Mary Beth?
Yeah, I think Doug just identified a really important distinction, and it would seem to me that regardless of whether you have a third-party verification of your landings amount, that the vessels are still going to be required to do, vessel trip reports in some fashion. So that's going to occur. And what I would, you know, we've gone around numerous times on, you know, we feel comfortable with volumetric measure. Other people don't feel comfortable with it. You know, what are we going to do about that? And, you know, I would hope that this, you know, method would produce, we now have three streams of data on catch. We have IVRs, VTRs, and dealer reports. Well, you know, quite frankly, those three numbers don't match up. And I would hope that at some point we'd be working towards getting them to match up. IVRs probably are always going to be a little bit different because it's an estimate by the captain. But to the extent VTRs and dealer reports should match, and I'm not, it's really still not clear to me why they don't. So this would be a fourth data stream. And what I would hope we would get out of that would be to see, based on this, you know, are the estimates that we've been using for volumetric measure, you know, close, the same, or way off, that we would, you know, that we would learn something from it. So I would think that we would not use it for catch monitoring in the first few years at all until we figure out whether or not the estimates are that we've been using are correct or not. But I think that if you look on page 51 at the top of this section, it says that we're considering a port side element in this amendment to measures to ensure that catch landings data are reported in a timely and accurate manner. And I think that would be appropriate for a federal dockside program. And then provide a basis for comparing cross-checking bycatch data that may be collected by observers at sea. And that, to me, is equivalent to the state program and that we should separate them out. And I think you can accomplish that and still meet all of these bullets on page 54 that Doug identified, and the first bullet would be the dockside monitoring through a federal program, and the rest would be the state. So it would restructure how it's dealt with in the document a little bit, but to me, it makes more sense.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions. One, I guess I don't understand in this fishery what the connection is, if there is one, between the VTRs and the dealer reports, how they would square up, or you're saying that they don't. I don't know if somebody can answer that. And I would guess the second question had to do with, at one point in time, it was my perception that the service indicated that the dealer permits could be conditioned to require them to do weight or volume measurement of the landings. But there again, I don't know what percentage of this cash comes through dealers or other stuff is going, you know, in other directions. So those are sort of two things that I throw out there. I don't know.
Dave,
yeah, I personally think the state programs work fine. I think the dealer should be the person of record. I've been against dockside monitors and groundfish. I'm against them in this. It's just another layer of bureaucracy. You know, if you create a federal program, you're going to create a federal problem. You know, you're going to have this enormous requirement stream for the person. They're going to be down there. It's going to cost a fortune. And you're not going to get any information that's any different. You might not even get, I mean, look at it in groundfish. Nobody's using it. It's just a guy who stands there and sends a piece of paper to somebody. It gets filed somewhere. It's the dealer report that matters. And I think you should leave it the way it is. You have the states that do a good job of monitoring the fisheries. When dealers buy fish, they buy it at some quantity. I mean, a fish box is 100 pounds, a hogshead, whatever it is. I think if you make the monitoring so expensive and you end up with herring at 50 or 60 cents a pound because somebody's got to pay 30 cents a pound to do all this monitoring, you're creating a huge problem here and you're not getting anything for it. What you want to get is what you get out of the state programs now. An estimate of the catch and an estimate of the bycatch. Simple. And creating a federal program that does the same thing is just another layer of bureaucracy with no, what I could see, intended, you know, purpose.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The at least the main state program is focused on bycatch and biologic information. It's not there to estimate catch, although it probably could. I'm not in favor of implementing a federal program if we don't need to. I think there's a way we can accommodate to alter the state's programs, given that they're limited. You know, we struggle with our budget. They're getting worse. We had a windfall this year through the commission process. I don't know how long that's going to last. Much of this, if you look at, 5.4.2, much of the discussion that we had here was similar to my feelings we had about the last section. I think we need some more committee work on it for the verification of the self-reporting. There's not a lot of confidence about the volumetric measurement by many other than the industry. The industry want to get paid for their fish. We use a marking system in the state that works well for our enforcement and for our fishermen. We use it through our rulemaking process for a number of small fisheries. I think we can expand it and apply it to this amendment in some way that's transparent. But I think Lori said earlier, it's just one more of those issues that we didn't quite finish.
Anyone else? Okay, so we have a big, wide swath of questions and very few answers, a lot of concerns. It's been suggested by several council members that have spoke that we should eliminate a federal observer, dockside observer program or monitoring program. So is there anyone on the council that would like to make that motion? David?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to... I can't tell which sections. I'm sorry, my eyesight isn't good enough to read these numbers, but to eliminate the federal dockside monitoring program.
Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Lori?
For clarification, that would be section 5.0 of the document, which includes the establishment of a federal portside sampling program, the sampling design priorities, trip selection priorities, coverage levels, and also the two alternatives to verify self-reported landings. I guess as a starting point, that would be consistent with the motion. It would be everything in section 5.0.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience and ask if there's anyone that wants to speak against the motion. Against the motion. Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps it's more of a question because I'm still trying to figure out exactly what this means. Does this just eliminate some of the options for verifying self-reported landings, or does this eliminate all of them and the entire concept of trying to get a third-party verification of landed weight?
Lori?
Well, the first sampling priority in the portside sampling program was to provide a third-party estimate of landings. The motion is to eliminate the portside sampling program. My interpretation of the motion is that it eliminates all of Section 5.0, this whole page right here. Because the alternatives to verify self-reported landings were incorporated into the portside sampling program.
Thank you. That's helpful. Well, then I am opposed to the motion. Absent some way to get a third-party verification of landed weights in the fishery that doesn't come from dealers or captains. We don't really know that the landed weights are accurate. I don't think there is a need to create an entirely new federal program with strictly dockside portside samplers to do the weight verification. But I think if this is getting rid of all the things we've worked so hard on, like certified volumetric measurements and hold certifications and sticking the holds, it's a huge mistake. It's the one thing we all agree on that everybody wants. The fishermen want it so they know they're getting a fair shake from the dealer. Those that are concerned that the landings are not an accurate estimate of what's really being caught want it. And I think there's a simple way to do this might be to have the federal ATSI observers stick the holds at the end of the trip. It's the very last thing they do. When the vessel hits the dock before it starts unloading, have the NIMS observers stick the holds. And then you have your third-party estimate of landed weight. I'm opposed to the motion. Thank you.
Anyone from the audience wanting to speak in favor? In favor. Ms. Kaler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Kalin, Lens Fisheries. Thank you for the opportunity to support the motion. I think we could continue to develop the state programs. I don't think any of us in the industry see a need for a third-party verification of weights. I mean, you've got your issues with your dealers and the fishermen that are always going to be there. Volumetric measurement, you know, I think that'll help possibly in that area, but I've always been at a loss why this has even been an issue in this amendment, because the fishermen generally hail more fish than the dealers do, and I don't think we have a problem. I mean, I don't think there's a big disconnect between what we're catching and what's being reported as landing. I don't believe there's been any question about that. When we set the ABCs, I think we've estimated them to be, you know, really to be very little uncertainty in that. So we support the motion, and I don't see why it isn't good enough for a captain and a dealer to swear to the government that the information they're providing is accurate. And I don't know where we've lost complete confidence in that kind of a system working. It's worked for a long time. So I support the motion. Thank you.
One more against? Anyone else against? Okay, I'll come back to the council. Against? Doug?
Yeah, I understand where this is coming from, because, you know, I have some, again, my concern is what are we going to do with the data that we get, particularly for the verification there? Is that going to be the data that we're going to use? Or are we going to continue to use IVR or VMS in conjunction with landings? I mean, that's a very key thing here, because you can be collecting data, as Dave said, for that wouldn't be utilized. For the purposes of putting this document out for a draft EIS and eventually going to public hearing, I'd like to have this option in. So that's why I'm going to oppose the motion, only because I think it's something that we've been working on for a long time. I think it's something that is viable, and based on what's in the draft EIS, we may decide to keep it in or not keep it in.
In favor? In favor? Mark Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason I'm in support of it is because at the last hearing committee meeting I went to that was held here in Portsmouth, and you were at the same meeting, we heard testimony from scientists involved in the monitoring of herring and in the assessment that the catch at age that's analyzed in the assessment was very good. And that tells me that the aggregate amount of herring being landed is well known, and moreover that the sampling information to disaggregate that down into catches by age group is pretty good as well. So I've been at a loss to understand for some time now why we're going through all these hoops to try to add additional layers of counting to something that I've heard is already well known. So unless I can understand why, what specifically what is not known, how it's affecting the assessment, what needs to be improved, then I'm inclined to go along with this. Thank you.
One more against. Terry?
Yeah, I second this motion specifically because I was not supportive of development of a new and separate federal data collection system. I'm supportive of the state work. I'm also supportive of the vessel level verification. A lot of questions have been asked. I think we need to take it through the public process. Industry has expressed an interest in looking at volumetric measurement. Maybe after public comment, we'll decide to take it out. But I mean, at this point, I agree with Tom Rudolph, and we've put a lot of work into getting it this far. Let's run up the ladder and see what we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a point of clarification: if we take this out, your perception is that you would take out section 5.0, 5.3, and 5.4 in their entirety.
Yes, I believe that 5.1 is the no action alternative and 5.2 are the service provider requirements which apply to observers. It would be obviously the section would be deleted, but the service provider requirements would be in other sections. So that's correct. At this point, the motion would eliminate all of section 5.0.
And that includes 5.3, 5.4?
Yes.
One more in favor. Mary Beth?
Actually, a little both. I mean, my preference, I agree with what Mark Gibson said about the current way we do it. And, you know, it is considered to be, you know, good information. I mean, we're not a data poor fishery. We have a long stream of catch at age information for this fishery. And I think it is adequate for the assessment. But then you listen to people's concerns about around the table, and we have really two different issues, and we have one motion. One is the issue about the state's program of sampling the fish, which supports the stock assessment, and has bycatch sampling that goes along with that. And then the second piece to it is whether or not we want to have this verification of self-reported landings. So my preference to seeing this motion fail would be to split the question. Because I do think that they are separate things. And so I would make a motion to split the question that, that the council would eliminate section 5.1, 5.2, and 5.3 would be one motion. And then a separate motion would be for inclusion or exclusion of 5.4, which is the section on verifying self-reported landings.
So actually, what another way to accomplish this, I think, would be to move to amend.
Sure.
So that we would have a motion that is the same as that, but it doesn't include 5.4.
That would be fine, too. Either way, that it works best. Is there a second? Seconded by Rip. Vince?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I may have missed something here, but if you're going to eliminate 5.0 except for 5.4, 5.4, isn't 5.2 that the states be approved as service providers? And does that then go away? And why would we be doing that if the rationale to not adopt the federal monitoring was that the states were going to do it?
I think I can answer this one. Because we were talking about establishing a new federal program in addition to the existing state program, and that section would allow the states to fill the need for this new federal program to be a vendor, if you will, with some exemptions from the requirements. But if this motion contemplates removing a new federal program with new requirements altogether, then there's no need to have a section that allows the states to provide those services in lieu of the Fed. But this doesn't remove or have any bearing on the existing state of Maine and state of Massachusetts dockside monitoring initiatives. This is separate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I got that right. Doug?
Does this motion eliminate the status quo option, which is no action alternative 5.1? Can we really do that, or would it just be you develop another section that would be 5.1? Okay.
Pat Kirkel?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Actually, to those 2 points, I understand your description of why the 5.2 would come out, but it served another purpose, and that was that the state programs aren't entirely, I guess, as I understand, maybe this is a question to the chair of the committee, but as I understand it, there was also interest in trying to harmonize the state programs with the information that is collected in a better way. And so we might lose that if all of five goes away. On the question about keeping the status quo alternative, if 5.4 stays in, the status quo alternative stays in, and if 5.4 goes out, then the whole section can go away.
Mary Beth?
To the point about harmonizing the different programs, I mean, that's happening now. And I think that is important. I mean, the one thing about, you know, the state's program and the fact that the states have an FMP is that we have a lot of crossover between the technical team and the PDT. So that process has been ongoing, and we don't need a change in the FMP to have that occur. And I would hope that nothing about this motion would cause that to go away. I mean, from an industry perspective, the state's program is extremely important. It is what supports the stock assessment. I mean, without it, we're really not in a good place at all. So we would be advocating to be maintaining these state programs as much as we possibly can. And if we run into funding issues, we're going to have to figure out a way to keep it going. I mean, it's the basic information for the stock assessment. And the state of Maine has been doing this for a very long time. I mean, I can't think of what the data stream is now, but Terry might remember, or perhaps even Lori. I mean, it goes back into longer than that, I thought, for the stock assessment purposes. But anyway, to Pat's point, it does happen now, and I would hope that nothing about this motion would make that go away.
I just want to make sure I understand the motion correctly. You're going to keep 5.4 and eliminate the rest. So if I understand this correctly, then the only people that are going to have their weight certified by a dockside monitor is a sea permit that comes in with two boxes of herring. So he's got to pay $75 an hour to unload $30 worth of fish.
Well, I mean, obviously we're going to have to come back if this motion passes and talk a little bit more about Section 5.4, but passing this motion would eliminate a portside sampling program. There would not be portside samplers, dockside monitors for anybody. The only thing left on the table is that we have some alternatives that we need to talk about how we're going to verify landings. And there is an option proposed for A and B vessels, which requires that they have to have their fish holds sealed and certified, and somebody's going to come along and sound the tank to provide an estimate of third-party landings. Then there are two options for the sea vessels that don't pump fish, where they would have to store their herring separately and a third party would come along and verify their herring catch. So that in itself doesn't necessarily have to constitute a portside sampling program, but we do, if this motion passes, need to come back and figure out who it is that's going to be doing that.
Anything further on the motion? Doug?
The way I see this is we have our status quo in Section 5.1. Section 5.2, because we were setting up a federal program, authorizes, Amendment 5 will authorize ASMFC as approved service providers for the federal at-sea and port sampling programs. That's the purpose of 5.2. 5.3 talks about the portside sampling program, sampling design, and protocols. So what did I think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I think if we take this out, the coordination with the feds and in consultation with the Herring PDT and the council will be taken out, the council will be taken out of the portside sampling design. It'll be strictly a state program. They'll design it as they wish and to try and meet the needs of the state and probably try and meet the needs of the herring management plans here, both the federal one. But we're going to be taking NOAA Fisheries, the Herring PDT, the councils out of that process.
In a general sense, yes, in that the council, I mean, we won't have the ability to mandate certain sampling priorities or to require certain sampling protocols to be undertaken. However, one of the goals and objectives of the catch monitoring program still is to try to resolve the inconsistencies that we have between portside sampling data and observer data, and to try to get at some of the variability in those two data sets. And I think that the PDT and the ASMFC Technical Committee and the state biologists need to continue to work on that issue, will continue to work on that issue regardless of what the council does in this amendment with respect to establishing a portside sampling program. But you are correct. I mean, if we go, you know, if we continue to look at it and we say, oh, well, you know, you could really resolve the variability by changing the way you sample the offloads, we aren't going to have the ability to do that because it's not going to be our program.
Vince.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So now I have another question, and that is this says that there wouldn't be a federal program, but say a year or 2 years from now, things change with the states. And this, for whatever reason, the states don't have the resources to do this. The commission's already written to the secretary saying, take emergency action, increase observer coverage at sea. If the secretary were to decide that it's more appropriate and cost-efficient to put those resources to dockside monitoring, by pulling this out, would that preclude NIMS from establishing a dockside monitoring program?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it necessarily precludes NIMS from establishing it, but given available resources and the fact that we can't find the resources to do it even if we mandate it, I wouldn't expect that the service would, you know, pick up the ball and start a portside sampling program if the state's programs are not funded. It's an important issue. I mean, deleting this from the document, you know, means that if funding for the state programs goes away, portside sampling goes away. And, you know, we talked about this at the committee level, and we even talked about potentially working with the ASMFC to try to coordinate an amendment with the ASMFC to have the commission maybe take on the port side sampling element and put some more teeth into it. But that wasn't received very well, and I think that's because of funding issues and, you know, concerns about state-level funding. Without having a program in the federal plan established, then if the funding either is reduced or redirected or whatever, then it's gone. I think this council and the ASMFC have both gone on record many times emphasizing the importance of the program and the need to continue the sampling.
We've talked about funding before, and if there's no funding for portside sampling, we could still, I think, put a requirement in subject to funding. And if there is no federal funding for it, we have a plan that says we want federal funding for port sampling. And if there's no funding, then we have an alternative. There will be no port sampling, or we rely on the states so long as the states have federal funding. But I think if we don't have a requirement for federal port sampling, federally funded, then we're going to have to do another amendment sometime to address port sampling. So are there other federal programs that have federal port sampling in the region? If there is federal port sampling, we should require it. And if there's no funding, then say subject to no funding, you know, we're not going to require the industry to fund it. We will require the industry. There will be no, you know, port sampling.
I thought the funding issue was the next issue we were going to take up, so I didn't want to confuse the two, but there is no federal funding, and there isn't anticipated that there would be federal funding. So why design a program if there's not going to be funding? So the council at some point is going to have to deal with the question of how to fund it.
To get back to Doug's original question, your concern was that the linkage may be broken, the harmonization between the state program, ASMFC, and the council?
I was just pointing out what we were losing by eliminating this in this motion. And clearly, yes, if we do that, you will lose the linkage to the federal plan. Now, clearly, the states of Massachusetts and Maine have been working cooperatively to try and get this information, but the council, the PDTs, and NOAA's input in the design of this and implementation of this would be gone.
Rodney? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. One of my questions was asked with the funding part of it. If it went away, this would go away. If the states, you know, we all know that, especially after yesterday, we heard that the budget cut was going to happen. Everybody was going to lose money yesterday. But she disappeared on me. I had a question for Lori. Now, if the states manage this dockside sampling, do we have the ability to go to the states and tell them we're looking for a specific, size and age sampling? Will they give it to us? Or will they say, no, that's our information because we're doing this?
You mean, can we tell them what to do?
Right, tell them what to do. I didn't want to be that blunt about it.
Will the states subjugate themselves to a federal power?
Right.
I doubt it.
Well, that's...
But, Lori?
No, we can't tell them what to do, but yes, they're always happy to share their data. So whatever information is collected has been utilized by the PDT, and, you know, I mean, we rely on that information for a lot of things. And I think, again, we need to keep in mind one of the goals and objectives of the amendment is to try to resolve the variability between the port side sampling data and the observer data, which is one of the main reasons why we can't really rely on either data source right now to get our bycatch estimates. So one way or the other, even if we don't establish this program, I think we're going that at least at the technical level, there's going to be some involvement in the states sampling programs. But correct, if we want the states to collect information on a specific issue or collect samples that target a specific size of fish or anything else, no, we aren't going to be able to tell them to do that.
I think people are making this too hard. I mean, the states are here at the table, and they're not going anywhere. And quite frankly, this interchange between the federal program and the state program has been going on longer than the FMP has been in place. So, I mean, you could say, well, it's not going to be in the FMP, it's not going to be that. But, I mean, from a practical standpoint, you know, the interchange has been going on a long time. The state of Maine's program has supported the stock assessment since, I don't know, but also for a very long time, 20-plus years. If these programs go away, it's very unclear that NIMS has any money to support the stock assessment. It's a huge problem. So the industry would be working to maintain the program as we have been and will continue to do so. The whole administration of a federal program is not really in here. And it seems kind of silly from a practical perspective if we think that the state programs are very robust to recreate another new program if we have programs that work, acknowledging that funding will be an issue. But, I mean, state directors are here at the table. I mean, if we have concerns about the data needs, I think that they will be taking those concerns to the commission. The council has the ability to communicate with the commission. You can write letters. We've even had, you know, joint meetings. I mean, the plans are supposed to complement each other. The federal FMP says that. The state's FMP says that. So from a practical perspective, I don't think we're, you know, separating or delinking anything. They've been, you know, linked since the beginning, and they'll continue to be so.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. My only point is that if the situation were to change within the states financially, is it going to be easy or is it going to be difficult for the council to respond and National Marine Fisheries Service to respond? This morning we talked about that haddock bycatch thing, and we asked Gene, could you do something? And he said it wasn't in the plan. It's going to require a plan amendment. It's going to take you 2 years to do it. So I'm just raising the question. Just wondering before you throw it out, if something were to change, is there a way for the council to react quickly, working with NIMS to get back in there? Because you provided a method to do it. I'm not recommending that the feds take this over, but I'm just saying, what if things were to happen with change within the states? That's all. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just was a point of curiosity. I was going to ask the respective state directors what happens in New Hampshire and Rhode Island. Is there any measurement of whatever product is landed there?
At the great, because of the great cooperation we have with the states of Maine and Massachusetts, they are doing some of the sampling in our state.
Nancy.
Just in support of what Mary Beth has been saying, we do use the state data, obviously, and herring is one of those species where we don't have a lot of data streams coming in to do the assessments, and so we do work very closely with the states and are dependent on the states to provide us information so that we can conduct the stock assessment.
A couple of points. We are partners in this process. Therefore, if the council, and we're part of it, if there's a need for particular information, then obviously our technical people, our staff, would work together in all likelihood with our federal counterparts to try to provide the information that is required, funding, of course, being the limiting factor, as it always is. As it stands now, we have our program. It's an excellent program. We're doing a very good job working in cooperation, with the industry, ASMFC funding, federal funds through ASMFC. If for some reason the funds were to vanish and our programs would end, then there would be no sampling of the catch dioxide. And if this amendment does not have a federal program, there would be no gathering of information by the federal government. That's the way it is. Then I think what would happen, or what should happen, is that the National Marine Fisheries Service would have to do some thinking about the importance of that database that would be lost, and would have to determine what it should do in order to gather information from a resource that is caught from the EEZ. Most of the fish comes from the EEZ. So I would assume, consistent with years gone by, maybe decades ago, now I've lost track, the statistics branch, the group of NOAA, NIMS, of the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, would sit down, put their heads together, and either reconstruct, give rebirth to the portside sampling program that they used to run so well for so many years prior to funds being cut, and then things shifted, reliance on the states. And, of course, again, as Nancy said, we work very cooperatively with the service, and it's worked very well. So I look at it this way. If the motion passes, then there would be no federal element, no federal program in this amendment. Down the road, if something happens to state funds and it disappears, then there'd have to be some quick movement by the federal government, in particular, the statistics people, to gather the information that is required for assessments and for proper management of this resource. So I suspect I'm going to support the motion to eliminate this particular section and to continue to rely on the federal government, and then eventually it'll all come to a head, and we'll see what will happen with regard to collection of statistics from federal waters for sea herring, and I think this will have a spin-off effect for the collection of biological information, catch information for other species, other stocks that are caught from federal waters and landed in the different states. This whole program has evolved, sampling program has evolved in a rather bizarre, strange way, so that the federal government has abandoned its responsibilities for gathering this important information and looks to somebody else to do it, and of course in groundfish, the industry paying for it, and it's a trend that seems to be continuing, just have the industry pay for all the port sampling, and I don't find that to be an appropriate responsibility for the industry. I still think it's a responsibility of the federal government in cooperation with the state, providing its own funds, hopefully, to assist in that effort.
Yeah, I just want to remind the council that in the area of monitoring, the Magnuson Act gives the secretary unilateral authority to implement a monitoring program. We don't have to wait for the council to take action to authorize it. But it is a discretionary thing, and it's one that that exists if we think it's necessary to put into place in the absence of some data collection that the government thinks might be necessary.
Thanks, Gene. That's not actually why I raised my hand, although to that point, that does not mean that we don't have to go through the same kind of rulemaking process that the council would go through. So it doesn't happen overnight. It's still effectively an amendment process. But the reason I raised my hand is actually in response to, you know, the comments about, so what if the state information goes away? Well, that much of that information, not all of that information, but much of that information, the information that's important, that's probably most important to the stock assessments, and I'll look to Jim and Nancy on that, could be collected through our biological sampling program. And we don't need regulations to do that. We do need funding, but we don't need regulations.
Yeah, I'm going to urge people to support the original motion, not the amended motion. It's very clear to me that there's a potential here for an unfunded mandate, one of my favorite federal issues, because we know who ends up funding it, the guy at the fish hold. First of all, and second of all, as I said in Groundfish, and I'll say it again here, I've never seen a dealer pay for an extra pound of fish, and I've never seen a fisherman give one away. So I think we're spending an awful lot of time on an issue that if people really have concerns with it, do a cooperative research project to figure out how much weight's in a hogshead or how many pounds is in a tote or whatever it is you want to do. But, you know, don't inflict this enormous monitoring program to get that information when you could get it for probably $25,000 by sending people out to measure fish holds and fish boxes.
Okay, you ready for the question? On the motion to amend, all those in favor, raise your hand. Seven. Opposed? Nine. Abstentions? One abstention. The motion to amend fails 7-9 with one abstention. Back on the main motion. Anything further on the main motion? Give you a second to remind yourself what that was. Everybody ready? All those in favor, raise your hand. Eight. Opposed? Eight. Chair's not going to vote. Any abstentions? One abstention. Motion fails 8-8 with one abstention. Lori, the next issue here is the alternatives for verifying self-reported landings, which we sort of just talked about. Did you want us to drill down on any of those?
Well, did we resolve anything?
No, we didn't.
Unfortunately, I think we're right back where we were with the whole issue with the portside sampling program. So part of it has to do with the alternatives for verifying self-reported landings. But, again, I mean, one of the big issues with the – we've touched on a lot of issues with the portside sampling program that are difficult issues to deal with. But I think the big issue that still needs to be addressed relative to the program is the oversight of the program. If it is going to be a federal program, this is something that – In my understanding is that it's something that NIMS would have oversight of. And the way that it's written in the document is that this program would be established and NIMS would be responsible through the Science Center and obviously working with the councils and ASMFC and the technical group to provide a sampling design annually that service providers can use to know how many trips need to be sampled in the fishery and where, you know, where the sampling needs to occur. So, and I know that the regional office has expressed concerns about that. That seems like a big issue to me, that we need to identify who's going to be in charge of the program and who's going to be responsible for collecting and holding the data and cleaning the data and all of that kind of, all of the administrative details that come along with a new data collection program. We've heard from the service that they don't have the resources to administer a portside sampling program right now. So that's sort of a big issue out there that hasn't been resolved. And then, of course, we can get into the details of the alternatives for verifying self-reported landings and some of the issues there as well.
I think these are things that need to be worked out through the PDT process. I think that the policy questions, the outstanding policy questions, are what we should be focused on here. And the policy question in this regard is what's the purpose of the dockside sampling program? And once you have the purpose of the program along with the other components of the monitoring program, then I think you need to look at them as a whole and decide exactly how the pieces fit together and how the monitoring occurs.
Lori.
Okay, I mean, I understand some of the technical issues and the process for sampling protocols and things like that being worked out by the PDT, but I guess my larger policy question, and I think it's a policy question, is who's in charge? Who's going to run the program? Is it going to be run by the agency? Who's in charge?
I think that goes to the funding question. And until we answer the funding question, I don't think we can answer that question.
Not to get into a debate, but this is the issue that we struggle with. And okay, say the industry funds it. So the industry is going to pay for the port side samplers. They're going to use service providers and pay for the samplers to come do the sampling. Who's in charge of the program? Who's going to decide on an annual basis how the sampling is going to occur? I mean, we have priorities. We have target levels of coverage. The PDT can provide an evaluation over the last year. Here's how the landings went. Here's how many landing events in the ports and things like that. But there still has to be some entity that's going to run the program and communicate information between the service providers and the fleet and provide the information to the service providers that they need to know which vessels they're going to be, you know, sample or which landings events they're going to need to sample. I mean, there has to be – I'm having a hard time understanding how we have a federal program if there isn't sort of a federal oversight of the program. And so even if the industry pays for the sampling, the part that's not clear in the document right now is everything else in terms of how the process works, how the sampling design is constructed, and who runs the sort of day-to-day details of getting the landings events that need to be sampled.
Well, I think the logical choice is the Northeast Fishery Science Center. They are the ones who have that kind of expertise regarding sampling design. Isn't this their bailiwick? I know there are funding problems, and there probably are no staff down at the center to take on this role and responsibility, but somebody has to do it, and it's a federal responsibility, I suspect. So Nancy can certainly say why it's inappropriate or appropriate to have the Science Center, home of all the fishery statistics.
Well, I mean, I think it's apparent that we do have the expertise and we certainly know how to manage data, but this is huge. I mean, I would never commit to anything unless I knew that there was a commitment of funding, and we're not talking about a trivial amount of funding, quite frankly. I mean, this has been one of our biggest concerns all along in terms of whoever funds an observer program. It's one thing to go out and observe. It's another thing to go out and do something with those data, which starts with, obviously, managing those data. So we're talking about a lot of people, a lot of capacity, and we're just not prepared to do that. So saying that we're in charge, I think, is very easy in the sense that, sure, we know what to do, but there is absolutely no way that we could deal with this at this time. And I'm not really so sure that we are the right entity to manage those data. So, but do we know how to do it? Sure. But, again, this is huge. This is absolutely huge.
And that's why I said that we need to talk about the funding issue. You know, one of the options is that it just be entirely a third party. But regardless of who it is, I do think it's still the PDT's responsibility and the council's responsibility to do some of the things that now seem to be just, you know, kicking the can down the road, like designing the sampling program and what's the goals and, you know, exactly being able to tell somebody exactly what the program is intended to do and how to do it. So those details need to be worked out ahead of time, regardless of who ultimately is responsible. And obviously we'll have some responsibility, even if it's a third party, 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 even if it's a third